So here we are. We can begin. Who goes first?
You're the host, you tell us.
What was it the last time? It was clockwise or anti-clockwise? I
Doesn't
don't remember.
matter.
I
Just
don't
go around
know.
the screen.
I can begin. Okay. I take the burden of reading.
And then,
And you the burden of my English.
so Marco, give us a sequence of people.
Okay, so then Jeffrey, I would say. And then I don't know who is first, Matteo, Andrea, and the.
Just do it.
Matteo and Andrea. So
Yeah, thank you.
me, Jeffrey, Matteo, and Andrea. Okay. Okay, we are. In the second chapter, the three steps of nature, page 15, paragraph 10. And when the preliminary conditions are satisfied, when the great endeavor has found its base, what will be the nature of that farther possibility which the activities of the intellectual life must serve? If mind is indeed nature's highest term, then the entire development of the rational and imaginative intellect, and the harmonious satisfaction of the emotions and sensibilities must be to them self-sufficient. But if, on the contrary, man is more than a reasoning and emotional animal, if beyond that which is being evolved, there is something that has to be evolved, then it may well be that the fullness of the mental life, the suppleness, flexibility, and wide capacity of the intellect, the ordered richness of emotion and sensibility, may be only a passage towards the development of a higher life and of more powerful faculties which are yet to manifest and to take possession of the lower instrument, just as mind itself has so taken possession of the body that the physical being no longer lives only for its own satisfaction, but provides the foundation and the materials for a superior activity.
So there's no discussion on that. We're happy with that.
I'm good.
I'm okay.
The assertion of a higher than the mental life is the whole foundation of Indian philosophy, and its acquisition and organization is the veritable object served by the methods of yoga. Mind is not the last term of evolution, not an ultimate aim, but like body, an instrument. It is even so termed in the language of yoga, the inner instrument. And Indian tradition asserts that this which is to be manifested is not a new term in human experience, but has been developed before and has even governed humanity in certain periods of its development. In any case, in order to be known, it must at one time have been partly developed. And if since then nature has sunk back from her achievement, the reason must always be found in some unrealized harmony, some insufficiency of the intellectual and material basis to which she has now returned. Some over-specialization of the higher to the detriment of the lower existence. Some over-specialization of the higher to the detriment of the lower existence. I'm not sure I understand that particular piece.
Maybe in really super simple terms, if someone is really focused on developing their mind only, the body might go to waste. In spiritual terms, if someone is only focused on transcendence, they don't give a damn about the manifestation, right? This is played out in any religion that's focused on the afterlife for the ego. I mean, it doesn't have to, but we see it played out in the grossest terms.
He's sort of saying that this is the source of an event where mental has gained a certain hold and then it recedes and you have this regression, because he's talking about that. And then he says that perhaps this over-specialization of the higher to the lower is one of the possible causes for that. That's what I'm struggling. I understand the issue of the higher over the lower. I don't fully understand how that can be a cause to a regression, you know? Just trying to get a handle on that. So I think this regression, I mean, I think you mentioned when we were discussing the last time that maybe this sort of Atlantis kind of idea of an earlier civilization that had a high mental, but of course today it's not clear that there ever was an Atlantis. I mean, it's a legend, as opposed to it's not necessarily scientifically believed to have actually existed. But he seems to use this idea as a reference nonetheless.
I think his point is, as I understand it, that we advance, but because not all of us advance, we have to go back to make sure that the whole thing is brought up. The physical, the vital, the mental, the spiritual, that it is all coming up. Nothing is left behind. So something gets developed and then it goes back down. And I don't know how that translates into history. I have no idea. But that's my understanding.
I think it's a good insight, actually. Yeah.
And it's super possible to conceive. In fact, I think I can almost state for certain that we have no idea what's beyond the scope of our detectable history, right? We have no idea. Just because something hasn't left a trace that is detectable, we're talking about spans of billions and billions of years. I don't think that all of this is explainable based on our perceived, our ability to perceive the last hundred and our ability to vaguely perceive the last 150,000 years, right? We're talking billions of years. we're talking billions of years in a manifestation that is quite infinite, right? It's a finite manifestation, but it's in infinite terms. It's just so, for me, it's really easy to go there. I don't know why. It's very easy to have my imaginal mind activated around that. I don't know what it was. I don't have any stories, but it's really easy to sense into the unknown in that way.
You remember your past Atlantine Dayan life.
You're muted, Matthew.
And see the cycles that we're observing and extrapolate out from those cycles that we observe. Like that super simple example of on a personal scale, only dedicate everything to the mind. The vital energy and the physical energy gets depleted. There's something out of balance. That's super easy for me to extrapolate onto civilizational cycles, and then it's really easy to branch out to universal cycles. It's an extrapolation, but it just seems really, it seems really true that the seasons are even going to reflect the entire manifestation, a slowing down in winter and expanding out in spring, new growth, new birth.
Also reminds me of the Gebserian idea of over So the mental rational and mental deficient, right? So the magical rational and the magical deficient. So each of these, so in Gebser's idea, you have these different stages, and it goes through a healthy stage, and then it goes through an unhealthy regressive stage, and then a new stage emerges on the healthier side, and eventually that also goes into regression. So that's, it's not that dissimilar, I think, from this kind of understanding of the world. Yeah.
And personally, I go through that all the time. Like, I'm like, oh, this is, clearly this is getting out of balance. I need rest. I need this. Like, this stuff is kind of, it's, I'm always playing with it in my own personal practice, trying to sense into these, trying to just even detect the disharmonies and see if I can, I don't know, get more attuned. I don't know what the word is.
Yeah, and for us intellectuals, it's always a danger, right? So this over.
What's the danger?
For us intellectuals, it's always a danger, this over-specialization, this conviction that you're on the right track just because you can reason it out. Right. And that's not necessarily the way it works, right? So.
But I would also take up the last point of Matteo, also from in our everyday life or every year life. I also noticed that sometimes I think I have overcome some impulses, would call it lower vital impulses, like anger, like I don't know, fear, or you know, these emotional uncontrollable impulses. I think I have overcome them. Maybe after a year, they didn't show up, and then a detail, a stupid thing in your life happens, and then you fall again in this stupid trap and say, no, I fall back. There's a sort of relapse of the consciousness, and you have to work it out again and climb up. That's also, I think, common, at least in my experience in everyday life, that it is, can be also sometimes very frustrating, because you believe really you have overcome something and you didn't. And this shows you also what the subconscious, unconscious is about, something mechanical that rises up when you don't expect it, perhaps precisely because you don't expect it. So I see an analogy here with this thing.
I believe in the individual development. There's a continuous coming back to make sure that yet another detail of whatever the problem is will be enlightened, that we can bring the light of consciousness and love into all those places so that nothing is left behind. And that, I think, it's a lifetime work. So, you know, give up being disappointed about it. It'll just keep going, and then it goes again. And over time, you see progress anyway.
Yeah.
But on the short term, you can't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at the end you see progress, but I'm accustomed to this now. I think it's quite usual. Just a question, if I may. He is hinting here at an Indian tradition asserts. Does anyone know which Indian tradition is he? The Veda?
Say that one more time.
Here he says an Indian tradition asserts that, and so on, so on. At which, does he mean the Veda or what Indian tradition? Because I'm just wondering in which Indian tradition you find this idea that is reminiscent of this Atlantis.
Yugas?
Yeah, it sounds like the Yugas to me.
There are the Yugas.
Okay.
Thousands of years, cycles.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So the Yugas,
like 6,000-year cycle or something like that. I don't remember.
The word yugas is not one familiar to me.
Okay, good. There are epics, periods, and I don't know the details, but we're said to be in the Kali Yuga. The Satya Yuga is the Yuga of Truth, and there's like long cycles with this. The Kali Yuga is the most tumultuous of yugas. I don't know the names of the other two, Andrea.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Kali. Then there's also the kalpas, which are the creation and recreations of the universe. You have this mythology where the universe. You have also this sort of big bang and big crunch, and from that again a new universe comes into existence, and which is, by the way, also one of the many theories and hypotheses. Also, the modern science is again taking into account that there are some people who are thinking that might be also true.
Well, I was thinking just about your comments about the difficulty of managing one's own life. It is a comment that, because there are a certain number of people, maybe not so many now, but certainly when I was young, there were lots of people who thought that the human psyche was a small thing. And of course, the human psyche is so large that our opportunities for really understanding even ourselves are not huge. So I think it's important to note that as we go.
Yeah.
Just to name them, I don't know what the details of each are, but DVA, PARA, Dvapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, Satya Yuga, and Treta Yuga, Treta. I don't know the details. There's a Wikipedia articles on it. Sri Aurobindo talks about them at different stages.
Okay. The kalpas, I've also heard about that before.
Yeah. Kalpana is imagination in Sanskrit.
Yeah, it's called is it kalpa? Yeah, the cyclic universe. I don't remember now the exact term, but there is this this mythology that the universe sooner or later collapses onto itself and then somehow regenerates into another universe. There are also passages in the agenda where Mother says that we are actually in the seventh universe. So I have no idea. I think that's not her own vision or realization, but she mentions this Theon.
I've never seen that in context. I've only seen it out of context.
Yeah.
Andrea, you keep mentioning nothing is left behind, and it reminds me of that first motto of the Life Divine, the hymn to Usha. And it asks the question, right, Usha representing the dawn and the human aspiration. And the Vedic Rishi asks the question, what is her scope when she harmonizes with the dawns that shone out before and those that now must shine? She desires the ancient mornings and fulfills their light. Projecting forwards her illumination, she enters into communion with the rest that are to come. So it's like it's definitely the cycle where nothing is left behind. Everything is included. I love that statement. Well, my turn to read? Any other comments?
Yes.
No other comments. Okay. But what then is that correct? But what then constitutes this higher or highest existence to which our evolution is tending? In order to answer the question, we have to deal with a class of supreme experiences, a class of unusual conceptions, which it is difficult to represent accurately in any other language than the ancient Sanskrit tongue, in which alone they have been to some extent systematized. The only approximate terms in the English language have other associations, and Their use may lead to many and even serious inaccuracies. The terminology of yoga recognizes, besides the status of our physical and vital being termed the gross body, and doubly composed of the food sheath and the vital vehicle, besides the status of our mental being, termed the subtle body, and singly composed of the mind sheath or mental vehicle, manakosha. A third supreme and divine status of supramental being, termed the causal body, and composed of a fourth and fifth vehicle.
The causal, Matteo.
That's what I'm saying.
Thank you. What did I say?
Said casual.
Oh, causal. Thank you. The causal body, and composed of a fourth and fifth vehicle, Vijnana kosha and Ananda kosha, which are described as those of knowledge and bliss. But this knowledge is not a systematized result of mental questionings and reasonings, not a temporary arrangement of conclusions and opinions in the term of the highest probability, but rather a pure, self-existent and self-luminous truth. And this bliss is not a supreme pleasure of the heart and sensations with the experience of pain and sorrow as its background, but a delight also self-existent and independent of objects and particular experiences, a self-delight which is the very nature, the very stuff, as it were, of a transcendent and infinite existence.
Yeah, so there's kind of a lot there, right?
Yeah. This idea of bliss and consciousness as being self-existent things is impossible for the mind to understand. We can grope at it, but we aren't going to ever understand it.
Although what it brings to mind is my readings of Gandhi, when Gandhi talks about truth with a capital T. And so it has, I'm pretty sure Aurobindo was a contemporary with Gandhi, but I'm pretty sure they're both drawing off similar understandings of the world, right?
Well, they're both coming from the ancient Indian traditions, you know, where these concepts are embedded. Yeah.
Because as a rational Western scientist, the idea of T, truth, capital T, truth, is not an easy one.
Maybe better not in that realm, because it is, even though maybe a higher mental realm, still a mental realm, and I don't think they can arrive at absolute truth. It's a different level that this is addressing, right?
Can I bring that back to the Veda, the Satyam, Urtam, and Brahat, the true, the right, and the vast. The true is the true with a capital T. The right often gets translated as truth, but it's finite truth. It's truth with a little t. And so Sri Aurobindo translates it as the right, R-I-G-H-T. So Satyam, Urtam, Brahat, the true, the right, and the vast. And then the vast, of course, is wideness, cosmic.
So the Satyam, the Urham, and the...
Urtam and Brahat, B-R-H-A-T, R with a little dot under it.
I would like to correct what I said previously. It was not the theory of Kalpa, but Pralaya, the theory of the cyclic universe's Pralaya theory, not Kalpa. I don't know where it comes from, Kalpa.
Good to bring in Kalpa now. That's imagination.
Ah, that's why.
So I also have a question about this. It's come up before, but this issue of, so the gross body, the food sheath, and the vital vehicle. So we have this idea of body, sheath, and vehicle as three distinct, or the body is somehow both the sheath and the vehicle, as if I understand that correctly.
And it consists of different sheaths.
Yeah, different sheaths and different vehicles, but they're always the two paired together.
Right.
So a gross body is the food sheath and the vital vehicle. The subtle body is the mind sheath or the mental vehicle. And here he uses the term or rather than and. Mind sheath or the mental vehicle. So there's times, sometimes he talks about it, food sheath and the vital vehicle, but here it's mind sheath or the mental vehicle. So anyway, maybe it's not that important, but.
And so I think differentiating between subtle and gross is differentiating between inner. It's contained in this other word that goes back to footnote 4, the antakarana. This is the inner instrument, the inner mind, the mind and vital as opposed to the body. Yet because there's inner realms to all this stuff, and I think like I don't know what the easiest way to think about this is, like the inner is that which can't be touched, more or less the inner states of all these things.
I like that which can't be touched.
Right, because what is our inner vital? What is our inner mental? We can't touch the mental, but there is, the mental is not part of the gross body. Sorry. Yeah, but the gross body, like.
But the subtle body is this inner instrument, mind.
Uh-huh. Right?
Yeah. And also I wanted to come back to this bit at the beginning about the supreme experiences that are only represented in ancient Sanskrit. So, because I tend to think of these things as represented inside the Vedas, which of course are written in Sanskrit.
Yeah, they don't all come from the Vedas. Yeah, they come from a lot of the ancient texts, but the Vedas are not a complete representation of the ancient texts. It's really vast.
But he's saying not, he doesn't use the term the Vedas. He just talks about the language of ancient Sanskrit. So,
yeah.
I wish I understood that better. But anyway.
You wish you understood Sanskrit better?
Yeah, well, that too.
Oh, okay.
I wish I understood enough about Sanskrit that I could make sense out of what he says there.
Okay, but to make sense out of what he says there, I think all you need to do is read the table of contents of the language of the gods. And you'll kind of see how Jyotipriya diagrams, she's teasing out this statement that he made, the first sentence to the second sentence of paragraph 12. She's teasing out, she's written a whole book on that. So to get at what he means right there, have a glance at the table of contents. You'll see, because she diagrams the Veda, she diagrams the Gita, she pulls off of all these ancient texts to arrive and show that the language of the gods exists in Sanskrit, and it doesn't exist in English. Like clearly when you say soul in English, it evokes, depending on our specific on our individual upbringing, it evokes some different things, where Sanskrit has an entire system around this. Like I mean, just like there is a mental soul, there's a vital soul, there's the soul in evolution, the psychic being, there's all these different aspects of the oneness that is explained in Sanskrit that's not explained in I think in any other language, but I'm certain it's not in English. We can use the translations of these things to make a more functional English to talk about these things. But if we're making a functional English to talk about these things, it's doing it in reference to the Sanskrit because it's already written. So in that case, there's a lot of examples where English is following Sanskrit in these worlds, in these worlds of discussion that we're engaged in. I hear it all throughout Sri Aurobindo, and then it comes out in so many conversations where people are trying to reference utilizing this work in application of our individual lives.
Yeah, but I love this idea of the body as a sheath plus a vehicle. I think it's such an interesting idea to work with, you know?
Yeah, sheath being kosha, right? We don't hear people really talk about sheaths in English. He's translating kosha, and vehicle, he's translating adhara. So there's, again, I see the references that he's making just because of steeping with this stuff. It's beautiful that it exists in Sanskrit. The more Sanskrit we learn, the more richer the English becomes, the more applicable the English becomes with this stuff, applicable the English becomes. I can't really say what the difference between vehicle and kosha is. Like, one is, what's the difference between a vehicle and a sheath? Does anyone have a sense of that?
Well, it's just this idea that the vehicle is what moves and the sheath is what contains. Contains is the right word exactly, but
yeah.
Or that holds in some sense.
That's nice.
Good. Because the longer form Sanskrit is Manomaya Kosha. And it actually translates as mind filled with sheath. Or a better translation is sheath, like what did you say? Container? Container filled with mind. Like we're all of our minds are part of this container filled with mind. And then the interconnectedness starts coming together. Same.
But the sheet is also mobile. So it's also the vehicle. So this sheet, the body can also move. It's
right.
A container, but at the same time, it can walk. So.
Yeah, Anamaya Kosha, sheath filled with food. Sheath filled with body. It's in process of moving.
But for me, the easiest way to imagine these things is just a very belief-based a way of thinking. Just when you die, you are, first of all, not everything is finished. There remains not just a soul, but your mind and your vital still exists. These sheets, or at least for some time, exist. And in some sense, you have also this in the Western philosophy with Descartes, who speaks about the dual mind and body dualism. But there it is more coarse-grained. Here there are more levels. But my way to imagine this is just when you die, you are not left just a soul, just being, poor being, but still someone capable of thinking, which goes, obviously, flies in the face of modern science, because there's this idea that you are your brain. Your mind is your brain. Your brain is your mind. But
which is still a very Cartesian idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of research happening on near-death experiences.
Yeah.
That is really being taken more and more seriously because it's overwhelming. You know, the evidence in the medical profession is overwhelming. Yeah, that there is stages of death and that there are experiences after death, after what we consider death. Yeah. Okay, are we ready to roll?
Excellent.
As ready as we can be.
Look. Do such psychological conceptions correspond to anything real and possible? All yoga asserts them as its ultimate experience and supreme aim. They form the governing principles of our highest possible state of consciousness, our widest possible range of existence. There is, we say, a harmony of supreme faculties, corresponding roughly to the psychological faculties of revelation, inspiration, and intuition, yet acting not in the intuitive reason or the divine mind, but on a still higher plane, which see truth directly face to face, or rather live in the truth of things, both universal and transcendent, and are its formulation and luminous activity. Wow, those sentences.
Yeah, can you read that entire sentence again? That
was yeah. Very cool. There is, we say, a harmony of supreme faculties, corresponding roughly to the psychological faculties of revelation, inspiration, and intuition, yet acting not in the intuitive reason or the divine mind, but on a still higher plane, which see truth directly face to face, or rather live in the truth of things, both universal and transcendent, and are its formulation and luminous activity. Breaks my brain.
So well, here he's toggling between Satyam, Urtam, and Brahat, right? You see little big truth, Satyam, little truth, Urtam, and then he goes universal, Brahat, and he's bringing in the Vedic goddesses of Ila, Saraswati, and Sarama, revelation, inspiration, and intuition. And he's then placing them as toggling between these upper and lower planes. It's really, there's a lot in this sentence.
But I have a problem here. Why does he speak? She said, yet acting not in the intuitive reason or the divine mind. He seems to imply that the divine mind is not able to see truth directly face to face.
Right, it is still a lower form of mind. It is the overmind, a supermind that can touch the absolute truth.
But I thought that the divine mind is a supermind.
No.
What is a divine mind?
Maybe if it was uppercase D, but this is lower.
Yeah.
I think we're making assumptions, but I think that's a good assumption, Andrea. Yeah, that this is, he's talking about the overmind because he's comparing the higher to the lower, the real idea to the finite earthly idea.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that the divine mind is not divine enough here in this sense.
Exactly.
It is. I never found him saying this in these terms somewhere else. If you can't find it again, please.
Yeah, it's just know it's juxtaposition of the word divine with the word mind. And when I read that, I thought, that's odd. Mm. Because divine isn't only about mind. Mind is only a... So, the idea of divine mind as a self full realization can't be right.
Yeah. Exactly. I think this is a point. Yes. Thank you, Jeffrey. The divine cannot be only a mind. It is also love. It is bliss. Satchitananda. No.
It is body.
It is body. Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. And these faculties are the light of a conscious existence superseding the egoistic and itself both cosmic and transcendent, the nature of which is bliss. And these faculties are the light of a conscious existence superseding the egoistic, and itself both cosmic and transcendent, the nature of which is bliss. These are obviously divine, and as man is at present apparently constituted, superhuman states of consciousness and activity. A trinity of transcendent existence, self-awareness, and self-delight is indeed the metaphysical description of the Supreme Atman, the Satchit Ananda, the self-formulation to our awakened knowledge of the unknowable, whether conceived as a pure impersonality or as a cosmic personality manifesting the universe. The trinity of transcendent existence, self-awareness, and self-delight is indeed the metaphysical description of the Supreme Atman, the self-formulation to our awakened knowledge of the unknowable, whether conceived as a pure impersonality or as a cosmic personality manifesting the universe. But
I'll come back to it.
Okay. But in yoga, they are regarded also in the psychological aspects as states of subjective existence to which our waking consciousness is now alien, but which dwell in us in a superconscious plane, and to which, therefore, we may always ascend. But in the yoga, they are regarded also in their psychological aspects as states of subjective existence, to which our waking consciousness is now alien, but which dwell in us in a superconscious plane, and to which, therefore, we may always ascend.
I love all the reading sentences twice, Andre.
I have to.
It makes sense. It's a good way.
This is just so much.
What I was going to say is this pure impersonality, it reminds me of this idea of, I can't remember where it comes from now, but the, what's the term? The sort of higher state of being, which comes across as a neutral or an impersonal element. So there's ideas about the divine or as being in some sense neutral, right? But I think he's saying it could be that, or it could be, you can think of it that way, or you can think of it as an actual personality. It doesn't really matter whether you do it one way or the other. That's the way I understood it.
Yeah, it's like it's all of the above.
Yes, yeah, all of the above. I like that, all of the above.
All of the above and the below.
It goes back to his point of God, using the word Godhead, having personal and impersonal aspects without emphasizing either, right. And noting not only the divine, but power also. So all kind of all four of those things.
And this idea that we may always ascend, so these are accessible. He's saying that this is not just abstract things that have to do with some guru somewhere. These are things that each of us can access.
That's why he's writing it. To give it to us as an understanding that we can aspire to it at least, but even get there.
And that's also why I don't consider him a philosopher. He's not writing philosophy. It's a communication of a lived experience. not just some mental rumination.
Transmission.
Even though he uses very much this philosophical language. But it's only because you need a way to convey it to other people, to us, to me, who are still on the ordinary mental level. Otherwise, there would be no, perhaps poetry, over mental poetry, Savitri, could be the other way, yeah? But
the
it's not about philosophy, and also not about poetry. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, Andrea.
Mind is an essential part of the whole thing, you know? We are depending on using our mind to even get here, you know, to exactly. even have these notions.
Yeah. So I have to say, kind of a personal revelation here, that my view on these things has changed while reading Aurobindo. So this idea of capital T truth and capital B bliss, as I say, as a Western trained scientist, not an easy thing to get my head around, but I kind of get it now in a way that I didn't before. Even though, because I have an aversion to the idea of the absolute, but I kind of get it. I don't necessarily have to think about it exactly as a capital A absolute, but I get the relationship. I tend to think I have this odd image of a self-bootstrapping idea. So truth and bliss without any underneath it are self-bootstrapping ideas. You don't need to sit on top of anything. They exist in their own reality. But it's me working these things through in my way of understanding the world. It's good.
Okay, should we go ahead to the next paragraph? So, for as is indicated by the name causal body, karana, as opposed to the two others which are instruments, karana, I don't know. So the first is pronounced karana, and the second is karana, probably, yeah? I don't know. So I repeat. For as is indicated by the name causal body, karana, as opposed to the two others which are instruments, karana, this crowning manifestation is also the source and effective power of all that in the actual evolution has preceded it. Our mental activities are indeed a derivation, selection, and so long as they are divided from the truth that is secretly their source, a deformation of the divine knowledge. Our sensations and emotions have the same relation to the bliss, our vital forces and actions to the aspect of will or force assumed by the divine consciousness, our physical being to the pure essence of that bliss and consciousness. I would like to reread this again.
I got nowhere with that, so please do.
I read it again. Yeah. Our sensations and emotions have the same relation to the bliss, our vital forces and actions to the aspect of will or force assumed by the divine consciousness, our physical being to the pure essence of that bliss and consciousness. I think we will have to take this up again, I suppose. But I
continue. You can take it piece by piece.
I think you could read it again because I got more out of it the second time.
Should I read it again? Third time?
Could you start from the beginning?
Okay. For, as is indicated by the name causal body, karana, as opposed to the two others which are instruments, karana. This crowning manifestations is also the source and effective power of all that in the actual evolution has preceded it.
Let's kind of link that back to the title of the chapter, The Three Steps of Nature. Right, the past, present, future, that which has evolved, that which is in the process of evolving, that which we're evolving into. And he's talking about the causal body, and then calling the two other bodies, the gross body and the subtle body, instrumentations, the causal body, this crowning manifestation, is also the source and effective power in the actual evolution that has preceded it. So saying that the causal is the source. The causal is, in the Bhagavad Gita, the Brahman is defined. Let me read this, because it's such a beautiful definition from the Bhagavad Gita that speaks to it. Might take me a second to find it. Brahman devotion.
That's why it is called causal body. It is because it is the cause of this crowning manifestation.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Now I think I get it.
This relationship between causal and instrument that is repeated in that last sentence that you read, where physical being is the instrument, bliss consciousness is the cause. Sensations, emotions are the instrument, bliss is the cause. Vital forces are the instrument, will is the cause. You follow me?
Yes.
Vital is will. Emotions have the same relation to the bliss is in relation to emotions. Vital forces to will. Or force. This is very much Schopenhauer. I don't know if you know a bit. You find this also a bit in the Western philosophy. Assumed by the divine consciousness, our physical being, to the pure essence of that bliss and consciousness.
So I did find it. This is Krishna defining Brahman. And it's super simple, but it's really hard to understand. I've been thinking about this for 5 years or longer. Brahman is that which is immutable and independent of any cause but itself. Brahman is that which is immutable and independent of any cause but itself. It's just really, I guess I've been with that for a number of years because it's mantric, and the mind has a hard time, like the mind needs to be silent to go there.
So these are these self-bootstrapping ideas that I was talking about.
Yeah, like the cosmos is turtles, you know, the creation myth, turtles all the way up and turtles all the way down. Do you know the story, Jeffrey? That's beautiful. But then, like, what are the turtles standing? Eventually, the turtles are standing on that which is immutable and independent of any cause but itself. The turtles are the finite in the manifestation, the determinable cosmos. Yeah, and it takes a quieting of the mind to make that extra jump.
I always love this image of bootstrapping, where you take your bootstraps and you yank and you lift yourself off the ground.
But in this last sentence, the last sentence of the page, I mean, so there's this relation between sensations and emotions with bliss. It's the first one, no? This is right? Then there is vital forces with will and force. This is the second one.
Yes.
And So far, so good. But then I read here, assumed by the divine consciousness, our physical being to the pure essence of that bliss and consciousness. So the physical being is in relation with bliss and consciousness?
Or the pure essence, maybe?
Like the underlying thing of the sensation and emotion and the will. They're all depending on the physical. Without the physical, there none of those exist.
Because he doesn't say our physical being to bliss and consciousness. He says our physical being to the pure essence mm-hmm. of that bliss and consciousness. And I think that pure essence is not there by random chance.
But it's even worse because I imagine the physical being something very far away from the pure essence of bliss.
And he challenges that notion radically.
Yeah, so that comes back to the discussion we had earlier about the fact that you physicality is absolutely fundamental to any
anything
divine state.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole crux of integral yoga right there.
Yeah.
Not all life is suffering. We notice the suffering as an evolutionary spur. The background is bliss. And we're here to manifest that. To do the impossible. To make the impossible possible.
Okay. Should I continue now with the evolution?
Yep.
The evolution which we observe and of which we are the terrestrial summit may be considered, in a sense, as an inverse manifestation by which these supreme powers in their unity and their diversity use, develop, and perfect the imperfect substance and activities of matter, of life, and of mind, so that they, the inferior modes, may express in mutable relativity an increasing harmony of the divine and eternal states from which they are born. If this be the truth of the universe, then the goal of evolution is also its cause. That's wonderful. The goal of evolution is also its cause. If the
final
truth,
call kind of thing.
Yeah, I like this. If this be the truth of the universe, then the goal of evolution is also its course. It is that which is immanent and its elements, and out of them is liberated. But the liberation is surely imperfect if it is only an escape and there is no return upon the containing substance and activities to exalt and transform them. The immanence itself would have no credible reason for being if it did not end in such a transformation. But if human mind can become capable of the glories of the divine light, human emotion and sensibility can be transformed into the mold and assume the measure and movement of the supreme bliss. Human action not only represent but feel itself to be the motion of a divine and non-egoistic force, and the physical substance of our being sufficiently partake of the purity of the supernal essence, sufficiently unify plasticity and durable constancy to support and prolong these highest experiences and agencies, then all the long labor of nature will end in a crowning justification, and her evolutions reveal their profound significance. This is a quite long sentence. Another piece.
Yeah, I wanted to come back to this idea that was in the very beginning of that, which is this idea that, the goal of evolution is also its cause. It is that which is immanent in its elements, and out of them is liberated. So this is a very interesting idea. So because the immanence is key, but at the same time that you have this emanation, you have this liberation, right?
Of the immanent.
Of the immanent, yeah.
The immanent becoming conscious in this vehicle that we are.
Yes. I love that. I love that.
It's like we, the way I like to say it is God gets to know itself through me.
Yes.
I become the conscious part of the manifestation where God becomes aware of itself. Him, her, that self. Something like that.
Yeah, and then the long sentence, I agree, I have trouble with bits of it, but I got the kind of sense of the whole without catching all the bits. But go over, read it again, maybe, Marco, slowly.
Yes, okay. So the last sentence you mean?
But the liberation is surely?
But if human mind can be controlled.
All right, it's just that I wanted to back up one sentence, but...
Okay. But the liberation is surely imperfect if it is only an escape and there is no return upon the containing substance and activities to exalt and transform them. The immanence itself would have no credible reason for being if it did not end in such transformation. But if human mind can become capable of the glories of the divine light, human emotion and sensibility can be transformed into the mold and assume the measure and movement of the supreme bliss. Human action not only represent but feel itself to be the motion of a divine and non-egoistic force, and the physical substance of our being sufficiently partake of the purity of the supernal essence, sufficiently unify plasticity and durable constancy to support and prolong these highest experiences and agencies, then all the long labor of nature will end in a crowning justification and her evolutions reveal their profound significance.
So the first two-thirds of that was recapping the causal relationships between emotion sensitivity, sensibility and bliss, action and force, and then physical substance and the essence of bliss and consciousness, right? So we're recapping that in the beginning part of that sentence. If human mind can become capable of the glories of the divine light, human emotion and sensibility can be transformed into the mold and assume the measure and movement of the supreme bliss. That was the first causal instrument relationship. Human action not only represent but feel itself to be the motion of a divine and non-egoistic force. That was the second causal and instrument relationship. And the physical substance of our being sufficiently partake of the purity of the supernal essence. That was the third causality and instrument. Now then we have plasticity and durable constancy, which we'll have to come back to support and prolong these highest experiences and agencies. And then we get back to the evolution and the crowning arrival at the end, right? So it's the part that's not quite clear is this plasticity and durable constancy.
So the mother described the supramental matter, like physical matter, as harder than diamond and more malleable than water. It's like, it's super impossible to even conceive of this stuff, but that's it right there. The plasticity and durability, plasticity and constancy. There's something coming into being that we don't that we don't know, that we aren't going to know, but there's some pointers and descriptors here that that we're linking in with stuff that the mother later said when she was unfolding in this experimental yogic, in these experimental yogic states of consciousness. And then also the causal body, I'm sorry, the gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body, these are also states of consciousness in that sense. They're also, it's also waking consciousness and dream consciousness and dreamless sleep consciousness. And then there's a fourth, which is not listed, he's not talking about here, but he's also getting into state, he's also kind of prepping the work for different states of consciousness through these sheaths. It's super interesting. This paragraph is wow, he's genius.
Another thing that I would like to add to what we said before, we were speaking about the near death experiences. Another experience that a lot of people have is the out-of-body experiences, so-called, and that where people have this experience to get out of their body. So what is going out there of the body? It's something that is not just a gross material sheet and vehicle, but something else more subtle. People call it astral body or whatever you would like to label it. Just to, because I know a lot of people who had this experience, so it's much more common, I think, than near-death experience, just to bring it into context. And but what I find here, what struck me most is the goal of evolution is also its cause. For me, this sentence makes a perfect summary of at least of all the chapter here. Because the goal of evolution is also its cause. It is the divine that finds itself in something which is an emanation of itself in itself, so to speak. Sorry for the convolution of words, but it is, yes, it is bootstrapping. Yeah, of course, yeah. And you have this also, again, I like to point out also the passages of the agenda, because this is perhaps the document that which struck me most. And there is also Mother who says that she receives the light from divine planes, and when she goes down in the subconscious, inconscient, in the nascent, suddenly she found the divine also under her feet in the total unconscious realm. So you have this image of the light that is above, but also if you dig deep enough, also below. And this is, I think, as I interpret it, it is what he means by that. The goal of evolution is also its cause. In this sentence, there is everything, I think.
Yeah, it's like a synopsis of the whole integral yoga.
Yeah.
in six words, or however many that is.
Yeah, really.
I get so much more out of reading this with you all in this way than I could ever get reading this alone. This is great. Thank you.
This is gold, right? So, I mean, it's all gold, but this is more gold than the rest.
Yeah, because we linger and we share. This is really nice.
Yeah.
So I wanted to come back to the plasticity and durable constancy, but it may be stating the obvious at this point, but you talked about supporting and prolonging these highest experiences and agencies. So you need constancy to support, but you need plasticity to prolong, because you need that kind of flex. right? So there's a kind of direct relationship there. And I think in some sense, I'm just sort of saying this, that these are things that have to do with the practical side of living, right? That the constancy and plasticity of attaining these experiences, the constancy and plasticity are the two elements that you need to gain access to these things, in that sense.
Yeah, we're being called to develop the accessibility to these states, constancy, being able to repeat them, basically act as scientists of consciousness, to be able to reproduce these states, to not be attached to the states. It's this incredible plasticity that's needed. And I flip back to the first paragraph of chapter one, to be perpetually reborn is the condition of a material immortality. That takes incredible fresh infusions of the spirit, basically and then I'm linking it with Savitri Canto 2, the issue where she had to go through an entire life review to be able to drop it, and then she emerged as the avatar in that moment where she was able to drop all of the everything from the past, and then she surged forward and goes on to battle death.
Your knowledge of Savitri is stronger than mine. I could never recall that, but
I've just been over it so many times.
Hey, we're two paragraphs from the end. Shall we push through, or do you want to stop early today?
I'm good pushing through.
I'm good also.
Yeah, I can do it a little more too. How about you? Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, is it me next?
Yes, it's you.
So dazzling is even a glimpse of this supreme existence, and so absorbing its attraction that once seen, we feel readily justified in neglecting all else for its pursuit. Even by an opposite exaggeration of that which sees all things in mind and the mental life as an exclusive ideal, mind comes to be regarded as an unworthy deformation and a supreme obstacle, the source of an illusory universe, a negation of the truth, and itself to be denied and all its works and results annulled if we desire the final liberation. But this is a half-truth which errs by regarding only the actual limitations of mind and ignores its divine intention. The ultimate knowledge is that which perceives and accepts God in the universe. The ultimate knowledge is that which perceives and accepts God in the universe as well as beyond the universe. The integral yoga is that which, having found the transcendent, can return upon the universe and possess it, retaining the power frequently to freely to descend as well as ascend the great stair of existence. For if the eternal wisdom exists at all, the faculty of mind also must have some use and destiny. That use must depend on its place in the ascent and in the return, and that destiny must be a fulfillment and transfiguration, not a rooting out or an annulling. So I'm hung up on certain things, but I'm okay with the whole.
Kind of makes me want to find the transcendent more and more. Is that having found the transcendent can return upon the universe and possess it, retaining the power freely to descend as well as ascend the great stare of existence. Savitri is such a huge help with this. Like
the great stare of existence takes me straight to Savitri, right? Uh-huh. There's a whole chapter on it, right?
So yeah, whole book on it, book two. The whole book, the book of the Traveler of the Worlds.
It's just this bit at the end, the return of that destiny must be a fulfillment and transfiguration, not a rooting out or an annulling.
That's the Buddhist thing, is the Christian thing is getting out of here and having the ego survive in the afterlife, heaven. And the Buddhist thing is attaining nirvana, getting out of the manifestation, and integral yoga, or best case scenario, all becoming bodhisattvas to help everyone else out of the manifestation. It always ends in this getting out of the extinguishment. But Sri Aurobindo, it came along and he said, no, they got it wrong. The more full, what does he say here? Yeah, basically the highest truth that we can regard is God in the universe.
Yeah. I have to admit, Matteo, although I understand where you're coming from, and I understand how one can view Christianity in a critical light in view of these texts, or say Buddhism as a critical light, I don't necessarily think that all Buddhism or all Christianity falls into the caricature.
Thank you.
And I just think one should be a little bit careful about what one says about the other religions. It's, I understand the principle, but I think one needs to be a little bit more circumspect about the way we talk. Because I think there are parts of Christianity that are just completely in line with this. There are other parts that one can feel, somewhat distant. And there are Christians who could do this fully. So I just think, I just say that.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeffrey. Yes, and Buddhism has evolved a lot, actually, in the last 50 years or so. He's talking about Buddhism 100 years ago. There's definitely rich traditions of mysticism in all of these, in all of these broad classes. Thank you. I appreciate being more careful with words and general statements like that.
But I think there is also this idea of transforming the body. I don't find this in Buddhism or...
No.
Yes, there are, I think there are some soul, these Gnostics maybe have some idea like that. But this idea of transforming the body to the divine image is, I think, it's you don't find it even in the Indian tradition. Huh? Apart the Veda, there are some intimations of that. But this is, I think, the particular...
practices their faith.
Sorry?
Each person practices their faith in very individual ways, despite what the larger dogmas or approaches say. And it's so easy to say, oh, well, they all do this. Well, no, they don't all do that. I think we have to be very respectful of other faiths and other religions and not, because if we start doing this thing where we say, well, the Christians got it all wrong and the Buddhists, well, then we're back in the same boat that we criticize them for, of being so disbanding and disbarring towards other traditions. We don't want to go. I mean, I don't think Aurobindo is proclaiming a kind of approach where we say we've got the truth and those guys got it wrong. I don't think that's right.
Yeah. You can find also very interesting quotes from Sri Aurobindo. If you read the letters on yoga, he's quite harsh with some of his disciples who exercise just this sport of denigrating all the other religious and spiritual traditions. And he was very harsh and I perfectly agree. there is no contradiction. I mean, yes, yes, but nevertheless, I think this idea of transforming the body—it is not disrespectful. It is just something that I couldn't find elsewhere, or at least not with this emphasis. But this is probably another issue. That's the transformation, so the yoga of the cells and so on, is perhaps I jumped into a discussion which is, we have to keep these two things separate, probably, yes.
You could argue that Christianity doesn't have a lot of the body and that it rejects the body, but you can also argue that the whole identification with Jesus Christ is an identification with the body and the importance of the body in the context of faith. And so it just depends which way you
communion.
Communion
and maybe the transfiguration was getting at that also. And then it becomes a political thing. The transfiguration of Christ, the ascension, the light body. There is all this stuff that's in the deep mysticism of these religions. Yeah, in the Buddhist tradition, there's the rainbow body that's not really, and then there's like all these like sparks of references to evolutionary souls and the transmigration of souls and things like that. It's super complex.
The Chinese had also some tradition like that. Seems to be also a forgotten tradition that has been found more recently, but I don't know. I don't remember, but they had also this idea of people say that also the ancient Egyptians, what we see now, this idea of preserving the physical body with the ancient Egypts, that this is only a very superficial view of a tradition that has gone lost, where probably also the ancient Egyptians had this idea of divinization of the physical body. And it is coming up because it must come up because it is there and it is waiting to be discovered. And I think science is also coming to this. They are actually speaking of this idea of making us immortal with genetic engineering and so on. I'm a bit skeptic about that. But I think that behind this impulse of science stands something, this idea that there is a power that can make us immortal. But the point is that this immortality is not just a physical immortality, it requires also a spiritual ascension. And if this will not be realized, also physical immortality will not be realized. Parenthesis closed, period.
So. Would like for us to proceed with the last chapter, the last paragraph, because I'm beginning to fade.
Well, go for it, Andrea. You can read the whole thing.
You want me to read it?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, if that helps you not fade, go for it.
Oh, thank you. That's probably true. We perceive, then, these three steps in nature. A bodily life, which is the basis of our existence here in the material world, a mental life into which we emerge and by which we raise the bodily to higher uses and enlarge it into a greater completeness, and a divine existence which is at once the goal of the other two and returns upon them to liberate them into their highest possibilities. Regarding none of them as either beyond our reach or below our nature, and the destruction of none of them as essential to the ultimate attainment, we accept this liberation and fulfillment as part, at least, and a large and important part of the aim of yoga. Shall I do that one more time?
Sure, one more time. And maybe we could finish off with a short meditation as well.
Lovely. We perceive then these three steps in nature: a bodily life, which is the basis of our existence here in the material world, a mental life into which we emerge and by which we raise the bodily to higher uses and enlarge it into a greater completeness, and a divine existence which is at once the goal of the other two and returns upon them to liberate them into their highest possibilities. Regarding none of them as either beyond our reach or below our nature, and the destruction of none of them as essential to the ultimate attainment, we accept this liberation and fulfillment as part, at least, and a large and important part of the aim of the yoga.
All life is yoga. That was a wonderful session. Thank you so much, Marco, for bringing us into this adventure.
I don't know if I was the first to initiate
but whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Thanks for facilitating the group. Yeah.
Thank you. Good. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
Au revoir.
I'll be in touch, Andrea.
Thank you.